Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week, we'll be discussing our picks for Best of the Year 2024, The Damned, Better Man, and Flow. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, super producer Craig Stanton.
Hello, William. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. Getting over a little bit of a cold, feeling and sounding way better than I have in about a week. So, that's good news, but, happy to be here with you. No AJ tonight, today.
Nope. AJ could not make it. Hope to get him back ASAP.
And just to be clear, the way you did that intro, you said our 2024, picks of the year, The Damned, Flow, and
Better Man.
Those are not the picks. Those are the other things we'll be discussing today, separate and apart from the best of the year 2024.
Gotta imagine hard commas between every
big,
one of those.
Gigantic commas, like boulders.
So not a colon, except a comma after the picks of the year. Correct. Great call.
I'm very excited to get into it with you.
What have you been watching since our last episode? Anything we need to catch up on?
Dude, let me tell you, I got one thing, big league tease coming. I got one thing that I've been very enthusiastically watching, but I'm going to save that for Netflix and Bill.
Okay.
So you're going to have to wait about 30 minutes to hear that one. Other than that, I've been watching the National Football League playoffs. And also just being busy and otherwise sick. How about you?
Basically the same. I have the couple reviews that I saw in theaters that we'll go over. But other than that, at-home viewing has been at a minimum. And so the only things I've thrown on the TV have been the NFL games or some Celtics games. Went to a Celtics game, I think, since we last spoke. That's basically been it. It's been sports over here.
It's very sporty. January is a sporty time of year. If you're into college football, January, very sporty, the most sporty.
A lot going on.
Basketball, hockey, football playoffs. What more could you ask for?
That's it.
I'll tell you one thing you could ask for, Bill. You could ask for your 2024 year in review. People are clamoring. The phone lines are jammed. The mailbox is stuffed. The inbox is full. Tell us about the 2024 year in review.
Inquiring minds want to know. So I have compilated a curated, if I may, a list of 2024.
Compilated, not a word. Off to a great start.
Compiled, excuse me. A list of movies from 2024 from the perspective of your very own Bill George, creator, founder, host of Should I Go See It. We have the worst of the year that I saw. We have a few honorable mentions that I really liked, but wouldn't necessarily say best of the year. We have multiple movies that I would say were the overall bests of the year. And then we have our Ziggy pick of the year, which we will get to. So I'm going to take you through how 2024 was as a movie year. I would say I've seen a lot of discourse about this on film Twitter, people saying that this Oscars is going to be one of the worst in history and that it was not a good year for movies, etc. I disagree. I think maybe from the Oscar historical perspective, you'll look back on it and it might seem strange, but on an actual movie-to-movie basis, I think 2024 actually had a lot of good stuff in here, but they're just very niche and very genre, so they're not going to show up in those big Oscar lists, but I still think there's a lot of good stuff in here that we'll get to. So I'm not going to hate on this as a movie year.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I mean, as a guy that sits here and listens to your opinion, which I hold in high regard, I feel like you many times over the course of 2024 were super, super into various films and came out in many cases saying that they're going to be your pick of the year, at least that they were contenders for it. So sure. I'm surprised to hear that film Twitter is shitting on 2024 as a year in movies. From my perspective, as the producer of the Should I Go See It podcast, I feel like it was pretty good.
Yeah, I think the issue is that a lot of people are looking forward to like 2025 and 26, where we know we're going to have a bunch of heavy hitters, like a new Nolan movie, another Denis Villeneuve movie, another Fincher movie, like some of that stuff. None of those really happened this year, with the exception of Dune 2, which we'll get to. There weren't a lot of big quote-unquote movies, so I think people just, They're not looking at some of the hidden gems in there. So
sure, sure.
But let's start with the stuff that we can totally drag, which were the worst of the years, which were really bad, which is partially maybe why 2024 is getting dragged into the abyss of a bad movie year.
Sure,
because the
sure.
stuff that was bad is some of the worst we've ever seen. Yeah.
Love it.
And we'll start with the worst of the year. It's Megalopolis. There's no debate. It actually might take the crown from me from Matrix Resurrections, objectively, as the worst movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
Subjectively, I'm still more mad about Matrix Resurrections because of my love for the franchise.
Sure.
But Megalopolis is the worst thing I've seen all year. Maybe
they killed something you loved.
Right. Yeah. So that's different. But I really can't put into words how bad Megalopolis is. So yeah, it's the worst thing you've ever seen.
That's no redeeming qualities.
Nothing, no value, no nothing. It's just not a fun, bad watch, just a bad, bad movie. And there's nothing more for me to say that hasn't already been said over the course of the year about this trash. So we'll move on from there. The Crow, the reboot of The Crow, put that on my list for worst of the year. It's just, it's bad. It's soulless. That's the problem. It just feels sterile, like very clinical, like a computer spat it out because it's time for a Crow reboot. You know what I mean? Like nothing there of substance. Really disliked it. So I'll throw The Crow in the list.
Doesn't hold a candle to The Crows Have Eyes, The Crowning.
The what?
That's a joke for people that watch Schitt's Creek. Next movie,
okay.
Please. Melissa Child's
Beetlejuice. So like it's in my worst of the list. Objectively, Tim Burton knows what he's doing. The guy's a pro. So it's not necessarily the worst made movie I saw, but the script was so bad and it continues to bother me. Given the legacy of what it's working off of and destroying in the first Beetlejuice, and the fact that there's a couple decent kernels of things in there that are squandered, it just really bothered me. The movie rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't like it at all. I left feeling icky. So Beetlejuice, did not care for.
Get it out.
And then finally, Madame Web, which is just like a joke of a movie at this point. There's some lines from it that have already become iconic in a bad way. And once you have seen it, it's fun to rag on. But for me, it was not fun to sit through. I would never put myself through it again. Even if it becomes this like cult classic where it's so bad it's good, I would never subject myself to it. Life's too short. So it's just a bad, bad movie. As
is this the one with the spiders in the Amazon? My mother.
Yes, exactly. Studying spiders in the Amazon. Yes. So Madame Web was just awful. So yeah, those are some bad movies, Megalopolis and Madame Web especially. So I think that definitely drags the average down for the year. But there's still a lot
like
of good stuff.
I feel like the only one here that you got any pushback on was probably Beetlejuice, no?
Correct. I did have some people that did actually really enjoy Beetlejuice, or at least mildly enjoyed it, that gave me some crap for how much I hated it. But no regrets. That's how I feel.
Yeah, no. I'm not asking you to walk it back. I was just clarifying.
No. Yeah, no, I would never. I stand by it. So yeah, so those were the worst of the year for me.
And then there's every other movie. Fast forward to all the stuff in the middle. And then there's honorable mentions on the
yes,
high end.
Yes, we're going to go the other end of the spectrum.
Go back and listen to every episode of this podcast from 2024 to get all the middling movies.
Precisely. Now, note, before I get into my bests of, I have to note that there's a couple key releases from 2024 that I still have not seen. And so at this point, we just like have to move on. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say that I did not get a chance to see Nickel Boys, which I have not seen in limited release. I have not seen anywhere yet. But it was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Drama. So it's got a lot of buzz, but it's just not playing anywhere. I have not seen The Last Showgirl, which is also supposed to be very good. That is now playing, and so I plan on catching it. I just haven't had a chance to yet. But that got a wider release after the Golden Globes. And The Brutalist, which is like won the Golden Globe for Best Drama, potentially has momentum to be front runner for Best Picture, now is getting a wider release because of the Golden Globe win, but I still have not had a chance to see it. It's not on VOD yet. It is also 4 hours long.
Oh.
And
damn.
So, I mean, as good as it seems to be, knowing that a 4 hour long heavy drama probably wasn't going to make my pick of the year anyway, just knowing me. But I still really, really want to see it. And I am deathly afraid that I will see it, love it, and then it will win Best Picture. And in retrospect, I'll look like an idiot for not making it my pick of the year. But that is the burden that I have to bear.
And so, not to spoil our tickets segment, but it sounds like you see no path currently to getting yourself in front of these movies.
Last Showgirl I can, and Brutalist I should be able to once I can carve out the time, because that's getting a wider release later this month.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Last Showgirl is now in AMC right now, so like I'm going to try to see that this week if I can.
Oh, okay, so we got a path.
Brutalist will go wide at the end of the month, and then I just got to make time for it. So I'll see it. I will see it. But, you know, it's almost the end of January. I got to wrap up 2024 here. So we're moving on.
So,
a couple honorable mentions. These are movies that I really liked. They are not my bests of the year. Maybe have a couple issues here and there, but I still really liked them and wanted to make sure we mentioned them. Starting with Challengers, which was the tennis drama. I thought it was very fun. I thought the music was great. It was a little too long. Narrative got a little convoluted, but it was super entertaining, and I think it'll only grow in popularity over time. It's going to become like an instant cult classic. So just really good, enjoyable movie. Liked it a lot.
Yeah, we saw this one together. I came out saying confidently that that was the horniest tennis movie of all time. I doubt there will ever be a hornier tennis movie.
I'd be hard-pressed to imagine it.
Yeah, you would be hard-pressed, you dog.
Another honorable mention was Scrambled. So this is way at the beginning of the year that I talked about this. This was a dramedy. I still remember it vividly the year later. It stuck with me. It was very funny, but also heartwarming and poignant. It's just a small movie that I want to keep banging the drum for. So Scrambled, definitely recommend.
Yeah, I think this was the one where AJ and I both reacted very strongly to you coming out of the gate in like January of 2024 saying that this movie was like a pick of the year contender. We're like, give me a break.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, I guess you stood by it. I don't know if that was out of like genuine good feelings for this movie or you just remember that you said it. So you felt like you needed to follow through. That's just for you to know and for us to have to speculate on. But Scrambled. Cool.
Scrambled. Stand by it. I believe it's on Hulu now. Don't quote me, but try to check it out. Best documentary I saw all year was called Music by John Williams. Mm-hmm. Definitely worth checking out on Disney+. It highlights the life and career of the greatest composer in cinema history. Must watch for anyone that's seen a movie before. Music by John Williams. Loved it. Heretic, I also have on here. Great little thriller with Hugh Grant getting to kind of do a heel turn and play the bad guy. But he does so while weaponizing the charm we all know him for. So it was really good. I hope he gets to do more of this in the future. The movie falls apart a little bit by the end. It's not a perfect thriller, but I definitely wanted to mention it because I really got sucked into it and enjoyed it. And then finally, Conclave. Just a very fun, pulpy drama about the selection of the next pope. You get some infighting, debate, amazing writing, great performances, beautiful locales, great original score. Just a solid, solid movie that's worth mentioning.
I still got to get myself in front of that.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. All right, so those were honorable mentions. We're moving into the bests here. These were my bests of the year, starting with The Substance, which was like a horror comedy thing. You've never seen anything quite like it. The performances are incredible. It was a career rejuvenating case for Demi Moore, who got the Golden Globe for Best Performance. And it's a movie that I've just kept thinking about ever since I saw it. Like, just really loved The Substance. Like, it's one of my best of the year.
Love it. Yeah, this one seems to be sticking with people too. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm still seeing posts and stuff about it, like on the internet.
Yeah,
in a way that you don't usually for a movie that's over a month old, you know?
Yep, definitely. Next best of the year, Smile 2. This was just an improvement on the original in every way. It took everything that worked about Smile 1 and ratcheted it up and also adjusted things that didn't work. Like the first Smile had no levity. It was kind of over-serious and it dragged a little bit in Act 2. This movie added some levity and kept the pace going. It's just one of the best executed horror movies in recent memory. Absolutely loved it. Stuck with me. Totally sucked in. Smile 2, highly recommend. You don't have to see the first one first, but I would recommend both. And I said it at the time, a horror movie might be my pick for the year. And it came close, to be honest.
Yeah, you still are the only person I've ever heard of talk about the Smile movie franchise in my life. So I'm glad you enjoyed
it. Well, you don't travel in the horror.
I sure don't.
You're not
sure
in those circles.
Not on those streets.
Yeah.
Not me.
The next one, best of the year contender, Strange Darling. Great, provocative, inventive thriller. It messes with the narrative structure of time in a fun way, not like a cheap way. Like, it felt like it actually served the story. And it's another movie you just can't help but get kind of drawn into. And it's very reliant on the twists and turns. So I don't want to say too much, but Strange Darling, if you go in cold, you won't regret it.
When did this come out?
Middle of the year.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I don't really remember talking about it. Maybe because you were so protective of the plot.
Maybe. Because, yeah, you got to go in. Got to go in fresh. Next up, Anora. Amazing performances. Great sense of place in New York and feel of realism. It's another movie you get kind of pulled into the world for those 2 hours. Like, you're kind of just in the movie. You're just in it. You forget your world exists. It was unique. I hadn't seen anything else like it this year. I know AJ just talked on the last podcast. He caught up with it. Also loved it. So Anora would nominate for a bunch of stuff. Just great, great movie. And finally, my other best of contender of the year, Dune 2. I mean, it's hard to say anything about this that hasn't already been said. It's an instant classic. This trilogy is going to end up being Denis Villeneuve's magnum opus. Sci-fi masterpiece. Like Smile 2, it's an improvement on the first film, basically in every way. Which I know they're kind of the same film, because it's all one story. But as like an installment of the series, this is undeniably more entertaining and better paced than the first one. I don't know anyone who's seen it that doesn't like it. It's irresistible. Dune 2 has to be towards the top of every list.
No arguments here, man.
I know you're a Dune fan as well.
I'm a Dune guy, for sure.
Okay.
What's crazy about this is two sequels in the best of the year. That's a very interesting thing that I bet has never happened before.
Good point. Unless it happens to be a year where Mission Impossible comes out, in which case, instantly in the list.
In that case, you get one sequel, not two sequels, but yes, sure.
Yeah, no, but that will pad the list no matter what.
Yeah.
All right. I have a runner-up for pick of the year and then my pick of the year. You ready for the home stretch here?
I'm ready. I also, just as an editorial note here, I feel like we need to rename the section that you're calling bests. Because it's honorable mention, best, and then runner-up, and then the best, which is the pick of the year itself.
Well,
We'll workshop it.
Bests, but like multiple
tier
bests.
Tier one, or like, really, these are all runners-up.
Yeah, I guess.
Your runner-up is more of a disqualification scenario. Why don't you just explain the runner-up thing, and then we'll
I could have ranked them. I could have done a number. I don't know. I just grouped them. But yeah, and when we get to the 60 pick of the year, I'll talk about what that means and how it's not necessarily best of the year per se.
Nuance.
Yeah. So runner up, the one that I like wanted to make pick of the year, but couldn't for reasons I'll explain, was Molly and Max in the Future. I love everything about this movie. It's one of the only movies on this list that I've actually gone back and watched multiple times. I already start to quote it in my actual life. There's certainly a personal connection to this movie because we were able to get the writer-director on the podcast. Go back and listen to that one if you haven't. Mm-hmm. But even if that didn't happen, this would still be in the spot because I loved it regardless.
Yeah, the reason it happened is because you liked the movie so much and reached out to the goddamn director.
Exactly. So I was like real close to making this the pick of the year. However, technically, this was an indie movie that was released in the festival circuit and all these and limited release in 2023. I just didn't see it until it hit VOD, which happened in early 2024. So it's really a 2023 movie. And so I'd be hard pressed to say that it is my pick of 2024 just because I happen to see it in 2024.
It sort of disqualified on a technicality, but deserves mention.
Has to be mentioned because for my 2024, this movie was like it. But that's just when I happen to catch it. So Molly Max in the Future. Going to keep talking about that one too. Now, 60 pick of the year. I should have had you like save a drum roll sound effect you could play or something.
Who needs
60
it?
Pick of the year. The Wild Robot gets the pick of the year. Now, when I say pick of the year, this is not necessarily the best movie of the year. It's not necessarily what I think should be Best Picture or my prediction that's going to win Best Picture. It's just, for me, when I look back at all my picks of the year, I have found the common theme tends to be the movie that emotionally affected me the most of that year. Like, this struck a chord with me, or that I generally cried the most during. This is like the BG Sob Award. Yeah. Is when you look back at all my picks of the year, that tends to be most years.
We're measuring and that's tears the wild and ounces
robot
here.
That's the wild robot. No movie connected with me as strongly this year as this one did. It is marvelous in every way. I laughed. I cried a lot. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. Recommend it to everybody. Admittedly, there is a deeper connection that I have that some may not, because the film is very much about motherhood as well as about loss. And I've lost my mother. So like, it really hit home. So that's a factor, certainly, and maybe why it was a sobathon. But hey, it's my pick. And so that's the one I'm making. Wild Robot. Cannot recommend it enough. And thus concludes 2024, a year in film from the perspective of Bill George.
Well, congrats to you. Congrats to the Wild Robot. Great year by you, numbers-wise. Back of your baseball card really got beefed up this year. A lot of films under the belt.
Yep.
And a lot of good ones. I feel like, like I said at the top, I feel like 2024 was a really good year for movies.
Yeah, I feel like Wild Robot, Molly and Max, Dune, Smile, Substance, these are all ones that I would revisit for sure, which is important when you're thinking about a year in movie and the longevity of a year in movies. So I felt good about it. I mean, is it 2007? No. Is it 1999? Of course not. Is it 2000 or 2001? No. But still, decent year. Decent year. But now we're on to 2025, Craig.
We're turning the page. The page has been turned for us, really.
Should we get into some Should I Go See It's from this year?
I would love to. So we said at the top, we got three movies on the docket today. Let's start with The Damned. IMDb describes it in the following way. A 19th century widow has to make an impossible choice when, during an especially cruel winter, a foreign ship sinks off the coast of her Icelandic fishing village. Bill, should I go see The Damned?
No.
Darn.
Yeah.
I've been hankering for a nice Icelandic fishing film.
Well, you're not going to, you're not going to be satisfied with this one. You have to wait for the next one.
This isn't the one?
Not the one.
Okay, tell me more.
It's a little horror movie. It's got a small cast. I will shout out a couple cast members. The Hound from Game of Thrones is in it.
Ah, hey, bud.
And from my favorite episode of Black Mirror, Hang the DJ, Frank, the guy who plays Frank in that episode, is in it. So that was cool for me.
The main dude.
The main guy, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Like you said, fishing village. They're running out of food during the winter. Another ship crashes nearby. They go to salvage some of the supplies, and the crew of that ship is actually still alive, and they try to jump onto their boat to be saved, but they can't fit them all on their little boat. And so they have to basically abandon some of the crew to die. And then their bodies wash up on shore, and then weird shit starts to happen. People start to have visions. They're kind of haunted by the sailors that the sea gave back, type of thing, if I may.
Ooh, wow, you may.
Interesting premise. Competently made. A lot of good landscapes and vistas. But it is so slow. Like, even for a 90-minute movie, it felt very long. And it's also very dimly lit.
Oh my God, 90 minutes.
It's also dimly lit. A lot of scenes at night, lit by whale oil lamps, etc., which obviously comes with the territory. But in my theater, we had not one, but two different people fall asleep during the movie and start to snore. And because they came alone, there was nobody there to elbow them. And so we had to listen to snoring during this very quiet, methodical, slow burn thriller. So that was great.
Woof.
And the ending just didn't pack the punch it needed to. Like, this type of movie that's going to be a slow movie, you got to have a finale that like really knocks your socks off to make it worth it. And this did not. So didn't love it.
Well, that's a shame. On your review, it says, see instead The Lodge. Remind me what The Lodge is?
The Lodge is another thriller that kind of feels like an A24 thriller, but isn't. And it's also slowly paced. It's also, it's about a woman taking care of two kids in this like cabin getaway situation and things start to go haywire. So it also has that feel of isolation and that feel of being stuck in the winter. So it had like some very similar themes to The Damned, but it's just a much better and more interesting movie.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. So we're passing on The Damned. Is there anything that could have redeemed it in your mind other than, you know, you said the pacing was, I mean, I don't know if that's one thing or many things, but is there anything that could have redeemed it?
You know, I think for me, the lead actress was good, but I feel like this movie needed Rebecca Hall specifically.
Specifically, I don't know why. Rebecca Hall.
I don't know why. This movie, I was watching this movie, I was like, this movie needs Rebecca Hall. Like, I was crying out for her. Like, she may have been able to carry the movie.
We want
and sell
Hall,
it a bit more.
They said.
I wanted Rebecca Hall in that lead role. She could have sold this movie. With the rise of A24 and Robert Eggers' work, these elevated horror movies have started to become like a dime a dozen. So you need to do something to stand out, and this one just does not. Maybe a Rebecca Hall performance could have pulled it off. I don't know. That's my only like guess as to what may have helped with this. But overall, I just think it's just a little too slow.
I don't think I've ever heard you like recommend fixing a movie with like a specific actor.
I know. It just popped into my head, and I was like, that's what this needs.
I wonder, does that speak to how bored you were in the theater? Just like yeah, flipping probably. Through a mental Rolodex of female leads that could have done a better job, and you landed on Rebecca Hall finally?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that actually probably sums it up. Wasn't a lot else to think about.
All right. Well, then, if that's all there is to say about The Damned, let's move on to the movie Better Man. Can't find a better man. Unfortunately, nothing to do.
Wish that song was in it.
Here's a description from IMDb.com. The meteoric rise, dramatic fall, and remarkable resurgence of British pop superstar Robbie Williams. Bill, this movie has a chimp on the cover. Should I go see it? What the fuck?
No, you should not.
What is happening?
Okay, we'll get to the ape bit later. Let's just do the basics first. So the whole thing is...
How is that not the basics? It's not a bit. It's the whole movie. We'll get to it.
So first of all, story-wise, standard music biopic. It's all the same notes that every movie hits. He starts out, he claws his way to the top, he becomes popular and hits fame, and then he gets into booze and drugs, and he hits rock bottom, and then he rises again, and then he gets clean, and then he makes good. It's every music movie ever. Except, we've seen that all before, and B, when we usually see it, we have something like the music catalog of Queen to like back it up throughout the entire film. In this case, we have the music of Robbie Williams. Now, Robbie Williams, talented, don't get me wrong. I've lived through his phase of popularity, and I only know about three of his songs, and one of them isn't in this movie. So, not a whole lot to really grab onto to keep you like locked into the movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you were from the UK, maybe that's a different story, but here in the old US of A, this dude does not have the punch of fucking, you know, Freddie Mercury or Elton
or
John.
Or Ray Charles or Johnny Cash or Bob Dylan. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so that's, you know, that's the movie. Now, however,
so what you just described, and again, I hadn't actually heard of this movie until you started talking about it. I hadn't seen any trailers or whatever. So like what you just described, for the people that are listening who don't know what the fuck we're talking about, the whole chimp thing, just sounds like a mediocre to bad biopic about an artist that you don't care about. That was a rinse and repeat thing. And that would be, I'm sure there are some people listening in their cars or whatever right now being like, yep, okay, I'll skip that one. But there's a twist,
which is the Robbie Williams character is played entirely by a computer-generated monkey, which when I started to describe this to Craig, having not seen the trailer, he thought that I was insane, clinically insane.
I didn't understand. I read and reread the text and did not understand the words in the order they were being told to me. It still makes no sense to me, frankly.
So here's the idea behind it. And the more I think about it, the more I think the monkey thing is actually pretty clever and is actually a really interesting way to do it. It's just that the movie behind it was no good. So here's the idea, basically. They want to make a Robbie Williams movie, right?
Who doesn't?
And Robbie Williams, I assume, wants to play himself. But
makes sense.
what do you do, right? You either need to cast a young Robbie Williams, which is an option, or you need to de-age the actual Robbie Williams, which is also not ideal. And so they decided, let's just make him an ape instead. Robbie Williams can do all the performance, the voicing. He can play himself, essentially. He can sing, do all that stuff. But you don't have to find an actor and you don't have to de-age him. You'll just use the monkey. And so narratively, they tie it in by saying the movie is from his perspective and this is how he sees himself. And he sees himself as a little less evolved than everybody else and a bit of a monkey. And so that's how they sell it.
Okay.
This is a movie about... Robbie Williams narrates the entire thing. And he's like, this is a movie about me and this is how I see myself and it's a monkey. And then you can get Robbie Williams to play himself without issues of performance.
You're a smart guy, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And you explain things in a smart way.
Yeah.
But what you just explained is the dumbest fucking fake problem I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, what you just said was, like, very eloquently and well thought out. Like, if you can't, like, sometimes you go to get ice cream and you can't decide whether you want chocolate or you want vanilla. So what you do instead is slam your dick in a car door and go home. Like, what is that third option? That third option is fucking insane. Like, what are we doing?
That is my guess. I don't know.
Hire an actor or de-age the real guy or make a CGI monkey is just an absolutely unhinged third option.
I don't know. Maybe they came up with the monkey thing from the jump. I don't know. But that's my guess as to how it came about because
crazy.
That, I guess, explains it. So he's a monkey and there are, I will give
also,
the movie some
monkey,
credit.
Chimp, ape, what are we, it looks like a chimp to me.
I'm using him interchangeably.
I'm not
a zoologist. No, it's okay. It's never addressed, Craig, so I don't know.
That feels like something we'd address, but.
Never addressed.
Not my monkey, not my circus, as they say.
I think the only line about it was him saying that he sees himself as less evolved than other people. And so thus they have a less evolved human, which is an ape, chimp, monkey. It's not an orangutan, at least. I don't know. Anyway, as far as the movie itself.
Yeah. Sorry.
There's a couple clever sequences. Like it's well shot at times. There's a fake oneer musical dance sequence that is actually a lot of fun. And there was a more of an emotional sequence with like the one song I know by him, Angels, which is a really good song. And I got a little misty in the way they deployed it. Like that was a good sequence. But by the end of the movie, you realize that this entire thing is just like a full on vanity project. And it's almost like a therapy session for him. Kind of like the Spielberg movie from a couple years ago where like you're watching it and you're like, oh, this is just this person trying to deal with their father. Like that's what this feels like. Robbie Williams had a lot of scenes about his relationship with his father. And so it definitely feels like a vanity project. It also dragged at times, like the gimmick of the monkey thing only goes so far and the effects are really good. So like eventually the monkey kind of blends away and it's just what you're watching. And after 2 hours and 18 minutes, like when the gimmick falls away after a half hour, basically, now we're into just the movie itself. And as described, the movie itself is not that good. So when you have an over 2 hour movie of this, you're just like, all right, like let's go. So they really need to tighten. There's only so many crazy montage sequences of a monkey snorting cocaine and doing pills that like you can handle, before you're like ready to move on with your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, not from experience, but I can imagine that there is a cap.
There's a line in the sand. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy. Wow.
So it's just it's a strange oddity of a movie that like years from now, I feel like is going to be rediscovered by word of mouth when friends tell friends, hey, did you see that movie where the guy's a fucking monkey the entire time? Like, I feel like it's going to get some traction in that way, but it's just a weird movie.
Weird movie with a dumb title too. Like what?
That's the name of one of his songs. I don't know. I also thought that was odd.
Yeah, like it doesn't speak to like really anything that could be a movie about anything at all, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
So that's silly to me.
I mean,
especially
it takes
when there's
chances.
Like a famous song by the same title.
I know. Well, in the U.S., I guess. I don't know how big Pearl Jam is in the U.K.
Well, I looked it up. Bill, the song Angels, I think, by Robbie Williams in the U.S. reached 52 on the U.S. Billboard Top 100. That was his biggest hit in the U.S., and it was 52 on the Top 100. Which, big hit, don't get me wrong. I'd fucking cut off my arm to get a Top 50 song. But, you know, not exactly like a household name.
Well, that's another film Twitter thing going on, is everybody dragging the movie because it makes no sense, but also because there's a bunch of tweets from like Deadline and Vanity Fair and Hollywood Reporter saying how much money this movie is not making. And so, you know, some distributor for the U.S. paid $15 million for the rights to distribute it, and it's only made $1 million, one singular $1 million in the U.S., and it costs $100 million to make.
Yeah. Crazy.
And so people keep quote tweeting like those news articles and saying like, we don't know who this guy is. What don't you understand about that? Like, yeah, the U.S. just does not know Robbie Williams. Why would we go see this movie?
Yeah, yeah.
And I know Robbie Williams, so I thought, okay, maybe I'll dig it. But I couldn't get into it.
No.
So yeah,
Better Man by Pearl Jam, by the way. Better Man by Pearl Jam, by the way, number one on the Billboard.
It was at number one.
Can't find a better man. I don't know for how long, but it hit it.
Hell of a track.
I'd cut off both my arms for that. So if we've got that out of our system, and boy, am I glad that we do,
yep,
we can move on to flow. This is an odd sentence on imdb.com. Cat is a solitary animal. It feels like that sentence, because you use some editing. Cat is a solitary animal, but as its home is devastated by a great flood, he finds refuge on a boat populated by various species and will have to team up with them despite their differences. Okay, Bill, should I go see the movie Flow?
Yes, I gave it a yes.
All right.
So this was nominated for Best International Film at the Golden Globes. I'm sure it will be similarly nominated for the Oscars. I think it'll probably be nominated for Best Animated, I assume, as well. It's from Latvia. It's an animated movie, CG animated. And like you said, it follows a cat that must kind of adventure into the unknown with some other animals once their home is flooded. It has a very interesting and kind of basic art style. Like, it's not photoreal. They're not going for that. It's got an art style that's very specific, and it's neat because the art style of all the characters is very hand-drawn and feels like that, but then the water simulations are fantastic and like really cool looking. Like, so they try to make the water photo real, which is a big part of the movie, but the rest of it has a very stylized look, and it's kind of an interesting combination. Because it's CG, they can do a lot of cool camera work. There's lots of long takes. And because it's dialogue free, because it's animals only, and the animals do not talk, this is not a wild robot.
Whoa. Dialogue free. Okay.
It's just the animals doing their thing.
I mean, there's a lot of movies with fucking animals. You and I saw a movie called Strays that had fucking animals, and they're talking the whole goddamn time.
No.
Most animal movies have dialogue, I might point out.
Not this one.
Okay, so we're like, this is like you're a human with a camera following around a cat. And it's talking to you as much as a normal cat would, which is zero.
Besides the meowing and the looks, that is correct.
Crazy.
So,
okay.
There's a lot of lush environments. There's a lot of ambient music. Like, you're kind of just taken into the world. This is a reference that AJ would understand. I'm afraid you won't. But it feels a lot like a Team Eco made video game, which, you know, that's the group that made Eco and Shadow of the Colossus.
A Team Eco made video is a sentence that makes about as much sense to me as the sentence that said cat is whatever the fuck it was.
No, there's a video game developer called Team Eco, and they made a game called Eco as well as Shadow of the Colossus and The Last Guardian, and those games have a very similar vibe to this movie, or vice versa. And it's also kind of feels like a video game in the sense that all these animals are trying to survive this flood, and it kind of goes in stages, and there's kind of they travel to different areas, which would kind of, in a video game, would be like a different level or a world to explore. Mm-hmm. Very chapter-like in that way, narratively, mm-hmm. which also feels video gamey. So yeah, so that's kind of the summary of it. But overall, it's good.
So you're saying that the Latvian cat movie with no dialogue a normal person, it's worth their time, their money, their effort, their energy to go to the theater and watch.
Well, yes, in the sense that it is a unique achievement. It is different than what you would normally see. I think that deserves attention. I think the art is beautiful. And now to be clear, dialogue-free movies can be difficult. They can kind of bore me after a while. So I definitely checked my watch about 30 minutes into this 90-minute movie. So I didn't love it. My attention did stray at times.
Yes, it's getting softer and softer, I feel.
It's a soft yes. I never said it was a hard yes. It's a soft yes. But I do think that it is so well-crafted and unique to what you would normally watch. I think it deserves some attention. I also did watch it on demand. You'd be hard pressed to find it in theaters at this point, I would probably say.
Okay. I was just about to ask, were you crossing your fingers that you'd run into Kristaps Porzingis at the theater seeing the Latvian cat movie?
If I ran into the Latvian unicorn, that'd be something else. So yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I think maybe it's one of those ones you watch the trailer and if it grabs you, go for it. And if not, that's fine.
All right.
All right.
That takes care of Should I Go See It?
Yeah,
should we move on to a little Netflix and Bill?
Yeah, I'm going to let you take this one because, again, I have not watched any TV lately.
Zero. Wow.
Zero.
No Netflix.
No Netflix. Bill. No Bill.
Well, I'll tell you what I've been watching. Me and KP have been rewatching Severance.
Oof, what a show.
Dude, what a show. So the day this podcast comes out will be the day that Severance Season 2 comes out, which is Friday, January 17th. So in our anticipation of that, and in the absence of any other show that we're really interested in right now on TV, we decided to rewatch Severance. It's been a long time. It took them a freaking while to get
many
to the
years.
Sequel.
Yep.
And I don't even remember, like, was the writer's strike part of that? Like, I don't know. It just seems like a really long time. Like, Apple TV Plus has cranked out many second seasons of stuff, it feels like, in the time between Severance Season 1 and now.
I believe the writer's strike was part of it. Also, just the expenses. My understanding is this is actually a very expensive show. I don't know if that's because of the nature of the show or because of reshoots or what, but it sounds like a lot of money has been spent on it as well. So it's been a very time-consuming process.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it very much. And yeah, like I said, we did a rewatch and man, what a show. I mean, I feel like a lot of us watched it, you know, because it was pretty short. It's only 8 or maybe 9 episodes. Nine episodes of TV from 4 years ago. It's like easy to forget, but we all have fond memories of watching it. We all like, you say Severance to someone, they're like, oh yeah, that show was sick. But like the individual twists and turns, like what actually happens, I had forgotten so much. Other than like the very broad strokes of the narrative arc of the season, like tons of twists and turns, tons of awesome. Oh my God. I mean, the show is just, it's so good. Even like the cliffhangers episode to episode, like totally got us, you know, it doesn't happen very often on a rewatch. So, I mean, I know by the time the audience is hearing my voice say this, season 2 is going to be out. So you might as well just jump right in. But I would maybe say, I don't know, hold off like 3 days and crank through season 1 again and just go on that ride and then go right into season 2. Because also, based on the trailer for season 2, this is me just speculating, but it seems to pick up like right away. Based on a couple quick clips from the way that season 1 ends and then the little you know breadcrumbs from the trailer, I feel like it's like a straight into like literally the next moment of their lives is the pickup of season 2.
Yeah, I definitely need to do a rewatch because I was one of those people that I think I had was homesick and I was like, oh, I keep hearing about Severance, and I ended up watching the whole damn season in a day. Like that was my work day, was 8 hours of watching Severance. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. Hence, I couldn't turn it off. So, but anytime you binge like that, the recollection is going to be suspect. And now you're adding the years of difference, like you said. So I should rewatch before going into 2 for sure. But I do recall loving the show very much. So I'm excited.
It's so awesome, man. I feel like I could just like keep gushing for like an hour. The thing that like strikes me the most about it, I feel like, just one last thought, is like there's a lot of like, you look at the cast and you're like, okay, like John Turturro, I never know how to say that guy's name. Christopher Walken's in it, like Patricia Arquette. Like there are definitely some names, but the main four or five characters, like the four people that work in the office, of which John Turturro is one of them. And Adam Scott, who's like a guy, a face, you know, if you watch Parks and Rec or whatever, you're like, oh yeah, there's that guy. But like basically a completely out of the blue performance and role for him. The actress that plays Helly is unbelievable. The actor so that plays Dylan is so great. The guy that plays Milchek is so great. Like it's a bunch of like, to me anyways, like pretty unknown actors who are just phenomenal and so perfectly cast, and they absolutely crush it. And even some of the big names, like they play minor parts. So it's like, it's cool to see that Christopher Walken is there, but it's not like a Christopher Walken show, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So anyways, it's the fucking best. I'm so psyched for season two.
Nice. Love it.
That's what's up, man. That's really all I got. There has not been a lot of Netflix and chilling, but we've been ripping through Severance last week.
Nice. I gotta get on it.
All right, let's talk tickets. Yeah, tickets.
I got a ticket to see The Wolfman. That's the only ticket I have right now is The Wolfman. I'm hoping to get to Brutalist and those other ones we talked about. But right now, Wolfman's on the docket, and I'm actually really excited about this one. So this is directed by Lee Whannell, who famous for The Conjuring, if I remember correctly, and some other horror movies. And their most recent one was The Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss.
Oh, so that
was
another. That movie was awesome.
The movie was great, and it was a great idea to take like a classic story and just modernize it, and just tell it a different way and add some new subtext to it. In this case, it was more about like toxic relationships and abuse, like just adding some new flavor to it. I thought Lee did an amazing job with that. So now we're moving into The Wolfman, which is also another classic story, but getting that modernized treatment. And it looks like, I try not to watch the trailers in full, but this trailer I've seen has come up a zillion times in the movies I've been watching lately. So I've caught bits and pieces of it, and it just looks really good, really excited for it. So I got a ticket for that as soon as I could. So I'm going to see that Thursday afternoon. But
we've talked
that's
about
it.
This phenomenon in Hollywood before, and we've sort of speculated jokingly that like it's almost as if like executives from one movie studio are like listening in on the other executives. Because like, how is it that there are two werewolf movies that come out within like 2 months of each other? Like I couldn't tell you the last time there was like a mainstream werewolf movie in
I know.
The theaters, and there's two in 2 months. Like what?
That I did notice that, and it is crazy. I mean, they're on completely opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of
style.
But yeah, it is funny that there's a movie called Werewolves, and then a month later, there's a movie called The Wolfman.
Like, what are we doing here?
I don't know.
I feel like there's got to be some like corporate espionage going on where there's bugged conference rooms, and they just feel like they gotta put something out.
Yeah, I mean, it could be cool. There is that phenomenon of twin movies, they call it, where you have things like A Bug's Life and Ants, Volcano and Dante's Peak, Deep Impact and Armageddon. Like you have these twin movies that come out around the same time, around the same subject.
Planet of the Apes and Better Man.
Yeah, precisely.
These things happen. I mean, it happens. A lot of good ideas out there.
It's just a bizarre idea. They're just in the air. You just got to be able to grab them. They're out there.
Totally. Well, hey, I hope you enjoy. I hope you find yourself in front of one of the other. So wait a minute. The Nickel Boys, Brutalist, and Last Showgirl, you're saying that those are like they've already gotten Oscar nominations. Is that accurate?
Well, the Oscar nominations,
front runners.
They've gotten Golden Globe nominations. The Oscar nominations continue to be pushed back as they deal with the wildfires in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But they did get Golden Globe nominations, which is a very good indicator that they will get.
Sure.
Oscar nomination. So I'm trying to see them. And the Golden Globes has now spurred on a wider release for these movies. So now the public will get a chance to see them, myself included. So
fantastic. Well, hopefully it doesn't blow a hole through the hard work you just did of compilating your best and worst of 2024, your honorable mentions.
Thank you.
Your disqualified by a technicality film. You got a whole lot of categories here. Maybe we'll tighten that up for 2025. But this has been fun, Bill.
Thank you, Craig, for going on this ride with me. And thank you to the listeners. Please make sure to follow on Instagram @ Should I Go See It.